Hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Owner's Box. I'm laughing because I am next to Michelle Yu, who looks like she's 19 years old today.
Yay. With her
bob haircut.
Don't worry, I'm still gray.
But we're here on the Owner's Box. I'm Billy Koch. I'm the founder and managing partner of Little Red Feather Racing Club. Everybody knows Michelle Yu and how great she is, so we don't need to talk about her too much. We have a great show for you today. We have John Green from DJ Stables. If you remember, if you listened to us or watch us a couple of weeks ago, we had his partner in Hades, who unfortunately did not run well in the Florida Derby. We'll find out today I don't even know, up the track. But here's the thing. We're so positive on the show. We're going to find a little bit about disappointment today. Like, that's okay. It's okay to hear about that. And we're going to talk about Wonder Wheel and Web Slinger and his mom. And did you know his mom, Lois, passed away last year? And she was kind of seems like the brainchild behind DJ Stables, Michelle. I did a little research. You're not going to believe that.
I was like, how'd you find that out, Billy? I'm very shocked.
Yeah. It's called the intranet.
Wait. You shifted in your seat now.
I did?
Because I see different things in your background I don't normally see.
Do you want me to go like that?
No. Go back this way. What's over there? I want to know.
Oh, that's a picture, and it's a little bar over a sink.
All right.
Yeah, it's got some scotch in there. It's got some.
You need a sink in your library.
Yeah.
What are you reading?
Well, I told you, it's the guest house.
Yeah.
You know, over here, I gave you the tour.
I know, with the little bed and fire. Yep.
Fireplace, the couch, mm-hmm. The TV. That's got a little living area over there. So. This was supposed This was supposed to be a cabana.
Who needs a cabana?
Guest house.
Guest house is the way to go.
Yeah, it really is. So anyway, we have John Green coming up. Michelle, we had a big week in horse racing, some mm-hmm. very big races. Why don't we discuss them?
Yes. So let's start off with the Dubai World Cup and the Dubai World Cup card. Yeah. The World Cup itself went to Laurel River, which I was not a fan.
Why are you laughing?
I don't know. Just because there were people that liked Laurel River, and that horse had not ever even been two turns. And I wasn't a huge fan of his over here.
Do you remember our horse Bobby Bow that we loved?
Yeah.
With Baffert. Mm-hmm. I've always followed Laurel River because he debuted the same day Bobby Bow debuted and he beat him. Bobby Bow ran second to Laurel River that day, and they were both Bafferts, and Bobby Bow was bet really big, and Laurel River was not. So I always kind of followed that horse's career, and I always thought he was a really good horse, and then you kind of lose sight of him when they go to Dubai.
No, right? It's funny, because Justin Dewitt asked me, hey, what's happened to Laurel River? And I'm like, oh, he's in Dubai. So this is 9-10 months ago, and they said they were going to point him to the World Cup, but I just didn't see it. And then they let him get away on this lead. It was is no one going to go with this horse?
Yeah, we talk about it all the time. Pace makes the race, and great job by Judmont Farms, who wins a lot of races. Mm-hmm. They do. They are kind of, I don't know, what do you call it? What do you call Judmont? Like the premier juggernaut. Mm-hmm. I was premier racing and breeding factory in the world. Like they
factory
are just,
sounds bad. You can't say factory.
Factory's bad.
Entity.
Okay.
There you go.
They are awesome. I'm big fans of Redmond. And you know what? When you see those silks, you know, people talk about silks all the time. Mm-hmm. When you see those silks, it's like you know in your head, oh, that's a good horse.
Yeah.
Or that's a well-bred horse. Or it's Arrogate and Enable and Frankel. You go, those are three of the best horses we've ever seen, right? I mean, God, I'm so jealous.
Their pink cap. You know, they send the jockeys that ride for them, they send the pink cap because they don't want you to have a mismatched pink cap. They want their pink cap.
Yeah. And you notice, can I say one more thing?
No.
We talk about relevance. And I just reeled off three of the greatest horses in horse racing history that they have had, that they've run and bred. And we didn't even mention Idiomatic, who won the Breeders' Cup last year.
Yeah.
And
you didn't even go back beyond 5 years. I mean, you go back and have Intercontinental and all these other
Ventura.
Horses.
Wasn't Ventura them too? I love Ventura. It is really amazing how they've been able to stay absolutely at the top of the game for since I was a kid.
Yes,
they have been able,
they have grown and they have, you know, matured in the right direction. They always are on top of the right breeding trends. And we've had Garrett on the show.
Yeah.
To talk about it. So it's been awesome. Also on the card, I was disappointed in the Shima Classic, which I kind of touted as like the race of all races.
Yeah.
Because August Rodin just was never involved. I mean, he was buried and just had nowhere to go and then nothing to say once they were running.
Yeah, it makes me nervous because we run Gold Phoenix tomorrow in his first race of the year, just like Augusta Rodin. And I'm like, yeah, oh, God.
But there's a big difference, right? I mean, hold on. My kids are being very loud. Hold on one second.
We were paused for a second for kid duty for Michelle. But I was just saying the Gold Phoenix runs tomorrow in the American Stakes that was postponed. And that was that's his first run of the year. And I got nervous when I saw Augusta Rodin didn't run well. I was like, God.
Yeah, but I'm going to give you the difference here, right? Yeah. I think that Aiden doesn't send a lot of horses to the carnival over there, right? They're not really geared up yet. So I think you have to take that into consideration. And I don't think he got the trip that suited him best, all honesty. On the flip side, every time Gold Phoenix has come off a layoff, he has won a graded stake. Right. I mean, so it's been his like
he's best ready race. Too. He's working good.
From a caliber standpoint, you know, you're talking about a race that had 16 Group One winners. You know, the American is definitely easier much than softer. That. Yeah. This is a great comeback for Gold Phoenix. So I definitely wouldn't hold any credence to that.
He just ships
from his stall to the paddock. I mean, Augusta.
I can't believe I just compared Gold Phoenix to Augusta Rodin. So stupid. All right, Michelle. Well, that was a disappointment. Who won the race?
I don't remember.
You don't even remember. That's not good. All right.
Liberty Island ran second, right?
I think so.
That part.
What about over here in the States? Because we had a couple of Derby preps, which I thought Mr. Muth was very impressive in Arkansas. They've already announced that Timberlake will not be going to the Derby.
Yeah, that's all kind of like all rolled into one thing. So let's just take it one drill point at a time. So the first thing was the Arkansas Derby, obviously. Yep. And that went to Muth, like you mentioned. Yep. I thought he ran excellently there. Didn't look amazing. Like distance was going to be an issue.
No.
He certainly, Rebels Romance won it. That's what it was.
There you go, Rebels Romance.
Certainly, he won the Breeders' Cup also. Yeah. He certainly showed that he would be a force to be reckoned with in the Derby. Now,
can I stop you? There was a new lawsuit filed. Did you see that? Yeah, were you going to talk about that?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so everyone has been talking about, obviously, the Baffert horse is getting no Derby points. So we already had Nysos, who's been sidelined. We've got May Moon, we've got Imagination, and we've got Muth, right? All for Baffert. And the owners opted to not move their horses. Wind Me Up's not a, come on, really? Okay. I mean, but he's okay, but he's not like one of the top, he's been beaten by his stablemates multiple times. Like,
fine.
Okay. So today, actually, Amr Zidan did file a lawsuit trying to get an injunction on the Churchill Downs ruling that would allow Baffert trained horses to run in the Kentucky Derby this year. He says his basis of his lawsuit is that Churchill has no constitutional or, you know, contractual rule ability to rule for this. Also, the fact that they purchased horses, Zidan himself purchased horses at excess of $10 million to run, hopefully, in the Derby. And that was knowing that the Baffert ban was supposed to be lifted. And they opted not to do that. So we'll see what comes of that. I mean, if you were going to file that, though, it's hard because we're a month out. Yeah. How long is the courts going to take?
Unfortunately, it doesn't seem. And I've been saying this all along, and I read something funny that someone said they're calling this like Kentucky Derby 149 and a half. Which I think is very funny. Now, at some point, Churchill's just going to have to wake up and say, okay, it's over. He's served his punishment. Let's move on.
On just the flip side of that, when we were talking already about the Derby maybe not having the impact that it would have had with people willing to bypass it, one deflection in Timberlake. You mentioned, they said they're going to turn him back in distance, that, you know, he didn't go on in the Arkansas Derby. That was his first try to mile an eighth. Obviously, the Kentucky Derby is further. And, you know, a lot of people, I think, try to push their horses into getting that classic distance to run in the Derby. And then we see a lot of them cut back into really good one turn horses, right, or just a little bit less horses. So sure, the fact that they're doing it early just might set them up for a really great spring and summer campaign going a little bit shorter. I mean, that Pack Day Mile right now is going to be so stone cold loaded.
Hey, it's like, we didn't even mention the Florida Derby.
We're not there yet. We heard out there.
Oh, sorry.
Yet. God, and then, like, because the flip side of that is also last week we talked about endlessly bypassing, and now I read that the Ammermans are thinking about sending.
I said that. I feel like I said that last week, didn't I?
You did. Did you call the Ammermans?
I had no idea. No, I didn't call the Ammermans. I love John Ammerman, but I did not call him. But I said, that's funny. We got to replay that on the show that I actually said that. I was like, I don't know about that. Anyway, I know John Green is going to call there any second. He's probably
hasn't popped up yet. So our last thing of note is the Florida Derby, which went to fierceness. He is he's stone cold hit or miss, right? Yes. Like, and watching him, I kind of feel like when he gets out there and no one looks at him, he's like, I'm the best, I'm the baddest, I'm the one you can't beat. And then if anybody looks him in the eye or sniffs him, he's like, oh, gosh, right?
So he ain't going to have that easy lead in the Derby. Forget about it.
Yeah.
Forget it.
He ain't going to have that in the Derby. So
he ain't going to have that in the Derby. But Johnny V is so good and so smart. Somehow he'll figure out a way. Who knows? Right now, I'm against it only because of what you just said, the hit or miss and the – he's going to be a short price, and I think he could do better with longer. But we're going to see what happens because we have the San Anita Derby this weekend. We have the Bluegrass this weekend. We have the Wood coming up. So you're going to have a lot of opportunities. I'm kind of rooting for Stronghold. I would love to see my buddy Phil D'Amato.
That's actually my, like, top Southern California Derby horse. I did like some pods and everything. And
I'm nice.
I do not like this horse. He's bred to do it. He looked like he wasn't tired at all running in Sunland. Well,
you know the story, right? You know, Spectator.
No. Yes.
He's by Spectator. It was a really good filly for the same owners, a homebred. And
who are great, died, by the way.
She died giving birth to Stronghold.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Sad. Sad owner's box, sad time. Yeah. Horrible. Sharon and Rick Waller, good people.
We need to get them on the show. We need to get Sharon on the show.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
I love her so much.
Let's hope let's knock on wood and hope he gets enough points in the San Diego Derby, and then we'll have the Wallers on. That'd be fun.
Okay. They're great. So. No, I did not know his dam died.
Yeah. Tough.
That's sad.
All right.
Also in Derby-esque news, Forever Young did win the UAE Derby, which was his stepping stone to the Kentucky Derby. Right. What did you think about the Japanese horse?
I think he's pretty good. You know, I listen, at some point they're going to break through. There's no doubt. They're just too strong. Their breeding program is too good, and they're going to break through, and they're going to get a Derby winner. It's a matter of time. What's his name? Ran well last year. He didn't run good in the Dubai World Cup recently. What's his name? Run well.
Well, Dermasotogake.
Dermasotogake, yeah.
Yeah, but he ran 16th in the Derby.
No, but I remember he had all kinds of trouble or something, though.
But then we didn't see him again until the Breeders' Cup where he ran second.
I think they're going to be okay. I don't know if it's Forever Young, if he's the one, but he's a nice horse and he's very well bred. And I'm telling you, Japanese are going to break through. Look at them in the Breeders' Cup. They are a force. They are a force, not to be messed with. All right, Michelle.
We're still waiting for DJ Stables here for John Green. Should we talk about what's up and coming at the Great Race Place this weekend?
Absolutely.
Okay, so we did have to cancel last week because of so much rain. I don't know, were you here or not here?
I was here. It was terrible.
Oh my gosh, it was it was like hailing. It was rainy. So I think they made the correct call in that scenario.
Right, and we're running tomorrow.
Let me share my screen and we will go through.
We're going to do this early. This is fantastic. Okay.
I know, right?
Well, we have a great day tomorrow because we have the American Stakes. We have the Wilshire, both on a Thursday, which should be interesting. A lot of eyes on Southern California. We have a lot. The card is really good tomorrow. The card is good on Saturday. We have a bunch of stakes. We have the Monrovia.
Which we draw for today.
We're drawing today. Right. We have the San Diego Derby, obviously. Is the Easter egg hunt has been moved, Michelle?
Yes, I know your family's. It is moved to this Sunday. This Sunday, April 7th. It's right here. Look. We also have, so you mentioned the Santa Anita Derby. We also have the Santa Anita Derby 5K if you're a runner yourself. There's the beer festival. We've got the derby party in the chandelier room. We've got Derby Day in Silks.
And all of this stuff is on the Santa Anita website. Just go to www.santaanita.com, right?
And look, we're going to do a Hot Wings Fest, it looks like. We're going to do Lucha Libre, so the fiesta in the infield.
All right, some wrestling.
So we have all of that to look forward to. And my kids are going to run in the 5K. Well, oh, not in the 5K.
Wait, what?
They're not running in the 5K. They're doing in their age group. So it's like part of the 5K festivities. So Olivia is going to be running in the, it's around the training track once. So it's six furlongs. And then Spencer is going to be running in the 50 furlong dash. I don't know what's it called. the 50 yard dash or something. It's down the home stretch.
Be there and will you be running?
Will I be there? Yes. No, this is the only time I've ever run any kind of K's, and it was 2020, the makeover. We ran this 5K right here.
Easy, Tiger.
And I don't run. I hate running. I despise running.
Interesting.
It's awful. And so Jody Villa-Gregory put together this whole like team of us to run. So it was like me and Jody and Christina Blacker and Zoe Cadman and Cynthia Smith, Alexis Garske, a group of us, right? Yep. And of course, Zoe and I thought the bar was how we should start. So we started off by drinking a bottle of champagne and having shots.
Oh, nice.
And I am not a runner. Awesome. I mentioned that part, right? So we started in the paddock and we did like three laps in the paddock, and then we had to run out and then we had to run the main track once and then the training track also. And that's how we finished. Right. So I was jamming in the paddock. The paddock, I was good.
What's your style? Like, are you like a armsy runner? If you're listening to the show and not watching it, Michelle is not imitating how she runs right now. Can you just run?
No, I don't run.
You want to text?
By the middle, John's here. Actually, he just popped in. I'm gonna let him listen to the rest of my story.
He's probably listening. Hey, John.
Hi, John.
I'm just finishing.
We sent him out.
I removed him. So he's finishing his podcast.
He's coming back in.
So when I got to the backside, I started to like fade, right? And then by the time we made it to the home stretch, I was only in front of like two girls. And then all of a sudden, like, she just jumped in at the quarter pole was Cynthia, and she just like pulled ahead and she beat us all by like 80. But by the end of the training track, I wasn't sure I could finish this race.
Really?
I did not run last, but it was not fun.
Or what happened?
Oh yeah. I mean, I was, I went way too fast too early. I was like Precious Passion.
That's how I do it too. Yeah. I'm like the
rabbit. I was the perfect rabbit.
All right. Well, we're waiting for. Oh, here he is. He's back.
Okay, let me get back with these guys.
Look at these guys. Right. Come back with these guys. I love it. How popular are you right now? I mean, are you the most popular?
Guys.
That was totally horse racing. What is happening?
Totally my bad.
Do two food podcasts at once.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, listen, you got to multitask. As you guys know, you're only at a certain level of the industry at certain times. So you got to try to leverage as much as possible. Imagine if my horse actually hit the board in the Florida Derby. How much better?
Yeah, we were going to talk about that. Welcome, John Green from DJ Stables. Welcome to the Owner's Box, my friend. Is this new or old, the beard? This is,
you know, Billy, I wanted to be just like you. I went to Michelle look for a number of years.
You went to the gray.
And then I went and I started to get gray, and it makes me look more established, right?
It's telling me I have to diet, and I'm not doing that.
Diet. Really?
No. Really? No way.
All right. You do the trim, but how blue can I get on your podcast? Am I allowed to say obnoxious things or not?
Mike Rapoli dropped the F-bomb 97 times.
This is wide open. We report to nobody.
There you go. That's what I love to hear. Okay. All right. Good.
All right. Well, before we get started, tell us just a little bit about yourself. Tell the people about yourself, how you got into the game. I know you've been in it for a long time. I read some very nice articles about your mom, Lois. I'd love to hear. I know there's some great stories when you first got started. Can you share a couple of those with our crew?
Absolutely. It would be my pleasure. First of all, thank you so much. I've been a fan of yours for at least 100 of the shows, if not all 100. And what are you guys up to now? 130?
We have a lot.
Yeah,
that's a lot. You guys 10 years, Billy.
10 years is a lot. And there's some that's probably not even on there that we've lost.
Wow. So, Michelle, you were 7 when you started? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right. Good.
I love him. We should bring him on every week.
So I started in the business when I was like 9 years old. A neighbor of ours had some $5,000 claimers. We're like 10 miles from Monmouth Park. And my dad, the short story is my dad popped his Achilles tendon playing tennis one summer. And he was, quite frankly, just driving my mom crazy because he was in a wheelchair and not able to do anything. So my mom paid me $1 a day to take my dad out in his wheelchair and just run him around the block once or twice so she could get some peace. So I did that. And after like the third day, my neighbor came out and he said, "Hey, if you guys aren't doing anything, why don't you come to the races with me on Saturday? Yeah, I got a horse running." So we went out to the races and of course, like, you know, the horse won and the jockey gave me his goggles and like, I, you know, we won $5 and I had a hot dog and like, what could be bad, you know? So my dad is an accountant and a CPA and a tax specialist by nature. And we're driving home and my dad sprawled out because he's in a cast from his crotch to his ankle. He sprawled out in the back seat and he goes, "Did you have fun?" And I was like, "Yeah, this was great, you know, on so many levels." And he said, "Yeah." He goes, "You know, and if that guy could win a race, imagine what we could do." And my dad spent the rest of the summer reading the AICPA tax code as it, you know, as it dealt with horses. And if that doesn't sound like an exciting summer, I don't know what does. I mean, you know, pouring over tax code, right? So finally, after about at the end of the year, he decided that, you know, we were going to claim a couple of horses. So we went to Meadowlands and we claimed 2 horses. And that was like I said, the early 80s. And by 85, my mom had, it was the general manager of the stable at the time, had, you know, gotten the stable to the point where we were in the top 3 in the country in number of wins wow. in 85, 86, and 87. So it just ballooned like almost overnight. And the majority of the horses were low-level claimers. So right. we would lose the horse for $25,000 in the second race. And in the 7th and 9th races, we'd claim the favorite for the $10,000 and the $8,000. Like that's just the right. way that we kind of did it. And we were flipping horses and winning a lot of races, but losing a shit ton of money. So finally, by the time I was in high school, we sat down and started to put together a game plan of what we were going to do differently. And that's when we started buying a little bit better stock. And that slowly evolved over the years until the point where about 5 years ago, I sold my financial planning firm and dedicated my
CPA.
Yep.
Never wanted to be CPA. Thank God I couldn't even spell CPA, let alone do taxes. So you don't want me doing your taxes, but
managing money. So you sold and you now.
And now I manage the DJ Stable entity full time. So I do that full time. I do the podcast kind of on the, you know, as a fun job as well, because I have a good time talking to my co-pilot Joe Bianca and get to talk to people like you guys about different aspects of the industry.
Let's talk about the podcast really quick. I heard it a little bit last week because you turned me on to it, but I didn't really know about it. So tell us about like what are we talking about? What are the issues?
No, thank you. So Rail Talk is the name of the podcast, and it can be found anywhere where streaming is available. Joe Bianca and I met 3 years ago when Sue Finley, who's one of the co-owners of the mm-hmm. Thoroughbred Daily News, asked me and lives in my town, actually, asked me to be a guest on this fledgling podcast that they were doing. It was like the show number 2, I think.
Right.
So after our show was over, you know, we yucked it up and had a good time. Like you guys had good chemistry. It worked out really well about different topics. And at the end of the show, she pulled me aside and asked me to be a co-host for going forward. So Bill Finley, who is a great writer, Eclipse winning writer, Joe Bianca, who's now won an Eclipse Award as well. And I had that show for a number of years. And it got to the point where my time there was kind of done. And I was ready to kind of do my own thing. So I left that podcast and Joe Bianca, to his credit, came with me. And the producer, Patty Wolf, came with us. And we started about 6 months later, we started our own podcast where we could be a little freer with what we want to say because we didn't have to worry so much about sponsors.
Yeah, no, that's we don't worry about sponsors. They either love us or hate us.
Right. It's a freeing feeling, isn't it? When you can actually say what you want and not have to worry about, you know, the sponsor ramifications. Legal ramifications are a different story.
Of course. Yes.
I'm the one that's always worried about that kind of stuff. Not Billy.
Good. It's good that you have somebody that actually is focused on that part of it for sure. There's so many things that are right and wrong about our industry, and our society is so litigious. You know, you guys know it in California. We see it here in New York and in Florida that, you have to be very conscious of what you say. You can't just kind of shoot from the hip. But there's a lot of things that should be said that should disrupt and make people think about different aspects of the industry rather than just kind of talk about the party line. And that's something that again, like you guys do, it's so freeing to be able to talk about different topics. And I'm not saying I'm always right, because God knows that can't be the truth.
Of course not.
You want to have different voices out there. Our industry has been so focused, and you talk about inbreeding in the horses. Our leadership has been so inbred over years that people don't want to see Yankees. They don't want to see people with facial hair. They don't want to see younger people. They don't want to see entrepreneurs from both coasts come in and kind of disrupt the status quo of the industry that's worked so well for them for years and years. And, we did a show and we compared our industry to dog racing, and it was scary, absolutely scary how many points were identical. And we were just like 3 or 4 years behind where that extinct industry is coming from. So I applaud you guys for giving people an opportunity and a soapbox to voice their opinions. I think it is bringing the industry together, kind of kicking and screaming across the finish line, but it is bringing everybody together.
It's happening. Michelle, I know you have a quick question. Go ahead.
Yes. I want to know what DJ Stables, what the DJ stands for.
So I contend that DJ is named after my sister Debbie and me, John. Okay.
Right.
My sister will contend that she's my older sister, that for years and years and years before I was even born, my parents called her DJ because those are her initials.
So it's just for her.
So it's just for her. So it depends. It's amazing. When we have horses and grade ones, all of a sudden it's Debbie's, but when we're losing money and we get audited and stuff like that, it's DJ. It's for both of us. Yeah.
I love that. Okay. I want to know about the learning curve then. I mean, you guys went from, never having been to the track and eating a hot dog to being a super successful claiming operation. And while you said you lose money, it's still hard to win races. So who taught you how to pick out horses to claim?
The claiming aspect of it came about by a number of different people. I'm friends with Glenn Lane, who was a big sheets guy, and he taught me how to read the sheets. We looked at patterns the Ragusons. Yeah, the Ragusons, the rag sheets. And so I kind of learned, from him as far as what to look for in patterns. For a number of years, I always looked for excuses. And that sounds kind of weird, but
that's
you look
me.
To see. I'm sorry, that's you.
That's yeah, you look at your handicapping angle.
You have to be willing to take a red pen and cross out certain races because the horse didn't like the surface. The horse didn't like the it was too hot that day. A horse broke loose out of the gate, and it made it fried his brain. Like there's a lot that went into it. This was all pre video, so sure. I would spend a lot of days at Monmouth Park. And actually, my mom, if she was still alive, would tell you that I went to Lehigh University because that was the one school in the area that actually had phone betting accounts. Not that I'm a bettor, but it gave me, by putting $50 in the phone bet account, it gave me the direct feed from the races. So back then when it was called Keystone Racetrack, I would set up my classes from 8 a.m. until 12 and then take night classes. And I would always have all my schedule open from like 12:15 until 5, because that's when I got to watch the races. So I would constantly take notes on that and then call the trainer and talk about, hey, we need to have a watch list. We need to take this horse next time out and stuff like that. And that kind of helped build it. So my parents were very patient. They were very You know, I really appreciate the fact that they let me go to college and try to do this at the same time, and that they were willing to be open to different ideas. And then we got a little lucky because the first horse that I ever bought at public auction ended up winning a grade one, won the Ashland. And her name was Do It With Style. So all of a sudden my parents thought that I knew what I was doing, and I was not going to discourage that, you know? So yeah. I got to go to a lot of sales with a lot of trainers, and Billy actually walked around, for two and a half years with your man, John Dowd at
He's
sales.
Great. John Dowd. I love John's John. Great.
John's great, nice straightforward guy, good horseman. Yep. And, he trained Song and a Prayer for us in the Derby.
That's right.
Yeah, so I learned a lot from John.
Song and a Prayer was yours?
Song and a Prayer was, yeah, we owned it with Bobby Hurley.
Bobby Hurley. Yeah.
Oh,
Bobby.
I didn't know that.
That's amazing.
Yep. The horse still has the fastest 6 furlongs in Derby history, which was great if the race was 3/4. But
I've got a nice 2-year-old that's a Song and a Prayer broodmare.
Is that right? Okay. Well, now did that mare actually fall? The one that you were waiting for?
No,
oh,
not
you're saying
yet.
You were waiting for fall? Not
yeah,
yet.
Yeah, waiting. Not yet.
Okay.
Not
All right.
yet.
All right.
I think John and I would have been best friends in college.
Oh yeah. Well, I think
we're
about the same age.
We went to college like 15 years after you.
Well, no. When did you graduate?
I graduated. I started in 88. I graduated in 92 and a half.
Yeah, we're the same. I'm a year old. I graduated in 91.
Okay. Okay. Good.
I just
good.
Look yeah, a lot.
And if I had finished properly on time, then I would have. Hey, there's
Olivia.
The next generation.
Yes.
Then I would have finished. Again. I would have finished the same time as you.
There you go. Yeah, we're the same age. That's amazing. Do you have kids?
I do. I have 2 daughters. One is 27 and one is 25.
And are they interested
are they in
the
races? Racing?
Yeah.
No. Not at all. My oldest daughter had interest in the horses, and she would come with me actually to feed them peppermints and carrots and kind of watch. And I have pictures of her at a sale with me and everything like that. And I think what ruins her is when she was like 8 years old, I brought her to the November breeding stock sale, and there was a mare like in book 6 that I thought, okay, we're definitely going to be able to buy this mare. You know, she's not pregnant. She's like 17 years old. She's one of Claiborne's afterthoughts. And I thought it was safe to like bring her to go look at that horse. And I'll never forget the name of the horse. The name of the horse was Rings and Things. And okay. We sat there, and I pulled the bid spotter beforehand and Bo, and said, hey, Bo, just my daughter, she's going to be bidding on this horse. Oh. Just like accept your bids.
Yeah. Right.
So no problem. So I think the mare's going to sell for like 20,000. So the bidding starts at 8, 10, 12. Little Carly jumps in at 14, 16. She bids again at 18, 20. She looks at me. I give her the nod. She bids 22. Well, the mare ends up bringing like $45,000.
Oh.
And as the mare is going through the ring and it's like at 30 and I tell her we're not bidding anymore, 30, 35, 40, she starts crying because she's already won in her notebook. You know, Rings and Things and who it's going to be bred to. And the horse sells, and Bo takes his break. And to his credit, he comes back afterwards with a Diet Coke, and he sits down next to her and he says, look, that's the horse business. Some of them are going to get sold. And she's, is it going to go to a good home? And it broke her heart, absolutely broke her heart. So I could never get her back. I mean, she comes to the big races now, but I can never really get her back interested. The only other time she was really interested was Joe Orsino was training for us, you know, years ago. My daughter was very young, and I said to her, look, I got to have a long conversation with Joe because we're going to fire him, and I got to, you know, move these horses and stuff. So just here's a bag of carrots. Go, you know, go with the assistant and go feed the horses. So like 20 minutes go by, and she comes in and she goes, Dad, I'm out of carrots. Did you fire Orsino yet?
Oh, Jesus. That's awesome. Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
So Joe actually came to her wedding last year and told the story.
Oh my goodness. Did you end up firing him or no? I mean,
I
obviously
did. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I ended up firing him. Yeah,
that was back.
not my best moment.
It's interesting. So we're talking about firing. Yeah. We're talking about it. And our show, and you've listened to it, we're always positive. We're always looking at positive things. Yeah. But there's also in our sport, there is disappointment. And you brought on, you talked about Hades. You know, we had big expectations for the Florida Derby. you're going into the race thinking, hey, this is our shot. We're going to Kentucky. He's going to run awesome. He's training great. And then all of a sudden, it doesn't happen. How do you deal with that?
You know, I think you have to be a gracious loser as well as a gracious winner. And when we won the Holy Bowl, I got all kinds of very nice well wishes from people, texts, tweets, you know, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I really hold that near and dear to my heart. So when Fierceness won, the very first thing that I did once we got kind of in the car on the way to the airport was I tweeted, he looked like a champion. I mean, he did. Fierceness was undoubtedly the best horse in that race. Got everything his way, but you know what? That's exactly what happened to us in the Holy Bowl. You know, we got everything our way and won it. So I think you have to be gracious on both ends. Is it easy? No, it sucks. I mean, we're all competitive. We all want to win. And there's a lot of reasons why we want to win. You know, this is a Florida bred gelding that is never going to have any impact on the industry from a breeding standpoint whatsoever. So it wasn't like, okay, if we win, it's a grade one.
This
I get stallion
your daughter's deals. Horse though. At one point,
this could be. That's right. I could breed wedding this horse month. to the you know, since dead rings and things, and probably you know. but yeah, it's. Yeah, I think you have to take it with a grain of salt. When you're fortunate enough to hit the wire first and win, you have to take stock and appreciate who got you there and why you're there and the decisions that the trainer made and the jockey made and Billy also that you make as a manager. Like, you know, it doesn't happen by accident. The horse doesn't end up in certain races in certain places because, you know, chance brought you there. So you have to really appreciate it because, as you know, you're going to win. You're going to lose four times as many times as you win.
100%. Yep. Michelle.
So it's a humbling game.
I want to go back to a couple of things that we had spoken to your partner about a couple of weeks ago when he was on the show. First of all, the name. Where'd the name come from?
Which one?
So Hades. Basically Hades. Yeah. So Hades.
Maybe he's just a Greek mythology fan or.
Kind of. Yeah. When we bought the horse, the horse was walking out and we went back to the barn and he goes, man, that horse he's got all the right parts in all the right places. He looks like a freaking Greek god. And I went, okay. And I looked up the jockey club and reserved the name. I looked for every Greek god that was there and reserved the name Hades. But the horse himself is as calm and quiet and laid back as they come. You think he's stoned. He's so relaxed and laid back. I don't really think he's got a lot going on upstairs, quite frankly, because nothing. The horse, that is, not my partner, not Joe Orsino.
Yeah.
He broke very small. Yeah. The horse.
My next question is allowing a partner in because it seems like you guys like to do things, you know, in your family unit or on your own. Do you have a lot of external partners?
Can I stop before that question's done? Because I want to go even further. You bought a very expensive Tappet colt at OBS March from my good friend Tom McCrocklin for $1.2 million with West Point. So I'm adding on to Michelle's question. Is this a new thing for DJ Stable?
Yeah. Normally, what we would prefer is not to have partners. And it has more to do with it's not being selfish and it's not that we think we know everything. But again, in this industry, there's so much more disappointment than joy that it's hard to explain to your partner why certain decisions were made and why it didn't work out. And it doesn't matter. And Billy, back me up on this if you think so. It doesn't matter how long they've been in the business. There's crossroads at every decision you have to make. And sometimes you want to do something that your partner doesn't. And if it doesn't work, well, then the partner's pissed off because they wanted to do their thing. And if it does work, sometimes the partner's pissed off because they were wrong. So you really have to be very careful with whom you partner with. It's not just a matter of, you know, you guys co-owning and kind of breaking up the expenses a little bit. There's egos involved and there's, you know, and once the horses get good, then you get little ticky-tack things like who gets what credentials?
Yeah.
Who gets to have a table at the Breeders' Cup? You know, it's all those little, if you have a $20,000 claim over the partner, it's no big deal because the horse will run and eventually get claimed. It's when you start getting successful in these big races where that's when you see people's true color. So
when you get the trophy and they're like, you need a duplicate trophy and it costs $26,000.
Exactly.
No, I can back you up. You're right. I deal with partnerships. So I have 15 to 20 people that I'm in charge of and that I report to every time. And I'm not always going to make the right decision. And I'm certainly not always going to make the most popular decision. But Gary Fenton always says there has to be a dad in the family. Like someone has to make those decisions. The tough ones, the really tough ones, running for a tag. You know, when you bought a horse for a lot, it doesn't work out. It's very difficult. The one thing, and you can back me up on this, and Michelle and I have talked about this in the past. The one thing that's really hard to tell someone is your horse is not that good.
Right.
That is the toughest thing to say, because no matter who you are, whether it's John, myself, Michelle, whether our horse is 5-2 or 35-1, there is a moment when you walk into the track where you say, I think we can win today.
Right.
And then when they don't and they run poorly, you have to just know. And we've been in this game a long time, so we've dealt with the disappointment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think there's part of us, especially us three, we're a little bit calloused. Not intentionally. We still, it's not like we don't care, but we've seen it so many times. We understand it more. So you have to talk to your partners and kind of give them, it's not that we don't care. It's not that we're not sad. It's not that we're not upset the horse didn't run well, but sometimes it's just that, hey, we were beaten today. We were in the wrong spot or just didn't work out. He's not that good. And that sucks.
Right. It does. And sometimes when you tell people that the horse is no good, you would have thought you told them their kid was ugly. I mean, it's like,
my kid was born super ugly. So just so you know, he's super cute now, but he was the ugliest baby. And people always get so shocked. But I'm like, it's just easy. It's easy to be honest, you guys. Come on.
Yeah. Your kid was ugly.
Michelle is the most honest of anybody. I mean, Michelle will tell, that's why she's great. She will tell it exactly like it is.
I get emails sometimes where people get upset that I've been honest about their horse. I'm like, well, where'd he run? Well, he ran last. I'm like, well, then he was slow. Like, well, I've also been completely wrong. Exactly. I said before the Saudi Cup, someone said, you know what Senior Buscador means? And I said, it means I'm too slow.
Oh, wow. He was on our show.
Before the Saudi Cup.
I just want to say one thing, though. Like, you, John, I mean, since the start and now with horses like Wonder Wheel and Web Slinger, I'm a big fan of Web Slinger, by the way. I'm a huge fan of Web Slinger. What's Web Slinger up to? Where does he show up next?
So Web Slinger is going to show up on Derby Day. He'll run in the graded stake on the undercard of
the
Derby Day.
The Woodford.
Yep.
Oh, great.
And you know, again, like everything else, he needs a race. Like, we're just talking about fierceness and how it was very important for fierceness to have an unadulterated chance to get to the lead. And when he did, he fulfilled his potential. Yep. Web Slinger is the opposite in the sense that he needs a ton of speed to go on up front and for the seas to part for him to hit the wire first. He is like the you know, I can't get down on him because he's an ATM machine for us. And he always tries and he always hits the board. But he's frustrating as hell because he'll be dead last by 15 lengths going into the final turn. And all of a sudden, he'll decide to run at that point. And that's his running style.
You've learned over the years, you can't change his style. Like, that's the biggest, that's a big takeaway that I tell people all the time. Don't change. That's his style. Don't try to put him up into the race or do something because then they don't run well. Like, that's what he wants to do. Well. It's really,
right.
Wow.
And that's what a lot of people think is, well, okay, if he was closer in the beginning part of the race, then when he has that kick, he'll pass everybody. Yeah. But you don't understand. It expends energy. Like, in order to be up front like that, it means that's when he only has a finite amount of – each horse only has a finite amount of juice, and it depends on when you're going to use it. Okay? And juice is the wrong word. I'm sorry.
When we used to play that video Calibrator, and you have this, it goes like this, and you can use it early or you can use it late.
Easy, John.
Right. Easy, John. Right. Exactly. I know. It's very sensitive to say. Each of them only has so much gas. How's that? Okay.
There you go.
Yeah. You already used two no words on this show. All right.
Exactly.
We haven't dropped.
Michelle, you're right. Like from that video game, you see the little bar in the corner of the screen, and it tells you how much energy you have left. And you can't force them to do anything that they don't want to do. Especially the really good ones, because the really good ones kind of know. Okay, this is what I need to do in order to win. And they all want to win. I mean, that's a thing that a lot of people don't understand also, is that they have that herd mentality. They, you know, the majority of them want to be the alpha. They want to be in front. It's just, we get in their way a lot of times because we want them to do something, a different surface they're not ready to do, a distance they're not ready to overcome. Shipping them and then trying to run, you know, they need a little calmer pre-race situation. So we're the ones that get in their way more so, I think, than more so than the fact that it's a lack of talent.
Michelle.
I agree. You've had so many good horses and you've won so many big races. Do you have a favorite memory that steps out for you?
I would say that definitely Wonder Wheel winning the Breeders' Cup at Keeneland was really special for us. And it was special for us because not only because the horse ran so well and you know, again, the seas kind of parted for us. That was a filly that should have been near the front. Didn't have to be on the lead, but should have been near the front. And the previous race, the prep, she won going wire to wire. So we were pretty sure that Tyler Gaffney was going to break her on top and then have her sit. And instead, she got sawed off and the hole closed, and she was in 13th going down the backstretch. And I remember thinking to myself, we're screwed. And Tyler, to his credit, kept the horse on the rail. It opened, another hole opened. He maneuvered her finally at the top of the stretch to the outside, and then she kicked in and won. And it was exciting because I didn't expect halfway through the race that we were going to win.
Yeah.
It was monumental because we knew at that point she was going to be the Eclipse champion, which has so much value. And it was the last grade. It was the last graded stake race that my mom actually attended and where we won. So it meant a great deal, you know, in hindsight, it meant even more because she passed away 6 months later. So it was really important for us as a family to be there and to all be together and kind of enjoying that situation. So that one sticks out for a lot of reasons.
That's what it's all about, my man. That's what it's
all
about.
Do you guys keep your mares to breed or do you sell them all?
It's both. We have a breeding operation also that's primarily in Kentucky. You know, we look at it from a valuation standpoint where, you know, is this horse worth more to the market than to us? So as much as I would have loved to have kept Wonder Wheel and had little wheelies, as babies, the reality of it is that we couldn't afford to keep her. The market just really wanted her more than what we wanted to keep her for. And there is such, as you guys know, there's such a risk involved. I mean, a horse can be a phenomenal racehorse, and then they're changing jobs. They're changing careers when they become breeding stock. It's a complete different, you know, situation for them. So it was just better value for us to sell her in the open market and then take that money and kind of reinvest in some 2-year-olds. And that's actually how we ended up with part of Sandman, who's the Tappet
Sandman
cult. Sandman, the Tappet cult that we have with West Point and a couple other partners.
You have great names. Who does your naming?
That I will take full responsibility for. The best off day that I have is at the end of the year, the Jockey Club releases like 13,000 names. And I go through there like literally like it's Christmas Eve. I go through and I reserve a dozen names. And I don't even know who the horses are going to be that we're going to assign them to. Right. But I always know, okay, I want to have, like, we have a Justify filly who's a 2-year-old that we named Achieve. I mean, what a great name for a horse, right? Achieve. It has nothing to do with Justify.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
I just didn't hear it. My screen stopped when you said the name. What was the name again?
Oh, Achieve. Achieve.
Achieve. Good name.
Yeah.
Good name.
So, it's stuff like that. Like, we literally have, this is my old school. Letty, you in behind the curtain. This
my old school. Behind the curtain.
Inventory list.
I'm like looking so, like this, like I can see.
Pen and paper. Hey, by the way, look at me. Pen and paper, bro.
There you go. Yeah, it's old school, right? Exactly. That's the way you do it. Right. Exactly. Yeah. That's the only way I remember. So, like, we have names. I don't have horses yet for them, but we have, you know, Blackmail is reserved, and Detox and Fiction and Grenade and, you know, Kraken and, you know, I have all those names that are available that we don't have horses for yet, but I know we will. So I prefer the one word names. My mom did the opposite. Mm-hmm. She liked the long flowy names. that were usually song titles.
I call those the claiming names, just so you know. Multiple words pushed together, it's a claiming horse.
I know, pushed together with missing letters.
Yes.
I got to run something by you because I was very proud of the name that we gave to a filly that we just bought at OBS March. And Michelle did not like it. So I'm
not even a little bit.
So it's a Clearly Now filly. Clearly Now.
Right. Right.
We named her. I remember it. The Rain Is Gone.
The Rain Is Gone after the song. Yeah.
That's awesome. Name. Michelle went like this.
It's a great name, and I'm sure when she wins for Never Win Two for 16, that the new owners will be very happy with it. It's a
There was another horse that I loved, a horse of Billy's, and then he named her Ice Cream, You Scream.
Yeah.
Oh, Silver Screamer. Billy.
Ice Cream, You Scream.
I don't know. I liked Singletary. Singletary was one of my favorite horse names.
That was a good name. That was a good name. John Green.
His other name was great. The other boy. The Bernardino.
Arrakis.
Yeah, Arrakis.
From Dune. Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. That is great.
Strong.
That is
strong.
Great. Yep. Strong,
John,
strong, good
stuff. Before we leave, we have a tradition here on the show, and you've been amazing. We've taken you way more time than you wanted.
It's been my pleasure.
Give one listener and one watcher just some advice.
It's John this whole time. It's been
John. Just some advice. They're getting into the game. What's the most important thing they should do?
I think the most important thing you should do getting into the game is learning who you can trust, because it's an unregulated industry. And again, with my background in finance and accounting and other regulated industries, that, you know, you kind of can get an idea of who the good cops and the bad cops are, or who the good guys and the bad guys are. And in this industry, it's so hard to tell. And there's a lot of people in the business that will bend you over, to put you bluntly. And you don't have a fighting chance. It's hard enough to get a good horse, and it's hard enough to get a horse that can make you some money and give you some enjoyment. But if you don't have a shot from the get-go because somebody sees you coming and they just sell you a bad horse that they know is not fast or is not worth what they're selling it to you, you're out of the game before you even have a chance. So you really need to do your homework on the people. Somebody, and again, I'll keep it brief. Somebody told me a long time ago that every piece of information on a catalog page is equally important. And that's from the top to the bottom.
Sure. Oh, we lost him. That was so good. I don't know what happened. I think his internet just went off. But from the top to the bottom, Michelle, maybe we just pause it.
Okay.
Somehow we lost John right in the middle of his impassioned plea, but he was like, find the people you can trust, which I think is great advice, Michelle. I think it's really smart, and it's not easy. It's not easy. Hi, Spencer.
Mommy.
Yes.
The toy with undead water.
I don't know what he said, but I did hear the word too. We'll be right there, Spence. All right, Michelle. I'm so glad
you didn't hear that. That is hilarious. Oh my gosh, look how red I am.
Special thanks to John Green. We did our Santa Anita pitch. Is there anything else, any other business we need to take care of before we call it a day? It's almost an hour of this show.
I know. It was a good one today.
It was great. John Green, thank you very much. We're sorry we lost you right there at the end, but
we
appreciate the time. Oh,
should I answer it?
Yeah, answer it. Okay, no. We'll do it off the show. Michelle,
okay.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.